Hello and welcome to today's episode of Tranquil Awakenings with me, Debbie Ison. On this episode of Tranquil Awakenings, we will be celebrating 1 year of the Tranquil Awakenings podcast, and I will be in conversation with my mum, Linda Stevenson. We're going to be reflecting on parenting, what it's like to have been on a journey with me growing up, and how important it is to be yourself. We hope you enjoy today's episode. So today, I'm quite excited about recording a podcast with you because when this podcast launches, it will be the 1 year anniversary. And so the podcast has been running through a whole year. And when I've been talking to people about the podcast, lots of people contact me about the podcast. One of the things that quite a few people have highlighted is that they like not only hearing about the different people and their journeys, but also finding out little bits about my life and my progress. And as I've been listening to the podcast, as I've been editing it, I've realised that as well as the main themes of talking about therapy, about well-being, this is also mapping a section of my life. Effectively, over the last year or so, I've been recording when I've been in different moods, when I've had different personal situations going on, when I've had different client-based work occurring. So I was thinking, like, perhaps when I listen to this in like 20 or 30 years' time, I think, wow, that showed that chapter of my life when I was in my 30s. So I thought, okay, for this episode, everyone's special that I have on, but what can I do perhaps that marks that 1 year anniversary that's perhaps a bit more significant or relevant to my journey? And I thought, do you know who would be good to ask on? My mum. So I contacted you, and what was your response?
It was, I don't know why you're asking me. I'm not interested. I can't do anything special. And I won't know what to say.
So I decide, well, no, that's not true. Because I think you have had lots of experiences over the time. You're not a therapist as such, and you've not gone on any particular therapeutic journey. But I think your life, you've still got some really interesting insights. But what you've also got is you've got a unique perspective on me, because you've known the evolution of me throughout my entire lifetime, because you're the first person I came into contact with because I was in your womb. So I thought we'll have a little bit of a chat about all of that, really.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Obviously, you listen to my podcast now, and I think over the last few years, you've become increasingly interested in well-being. So what sort of things tend to interest you when you're listening to these things, or when you come into one of the well-being shows I'm at?
I'm very interested in readings and spiritual readings. So the past, I've always been interested in ghosts and the spirits and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And just the way that a lot of things make you feel so much better. I've got into like burning incense in the house to clear it. And it sounds daft, but after you've done it, the house feels so lovely. It feels so wonderful. It's just so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so much of it can bring so much good to your life, so much peace, so much relaxation. Mm-hmm. And it's just nice to meet other people that have been through a lot of life experiences, and it's just so good.
Yeah. And I think, like what you were saying about the incense, you got that a little while ago from Andrew and Claude. With Phoenix Flames, and I know them well from the well-being events. And what I really like is when I was having a chat about you to get that incense, Ange tuned in and thought specifically, what is it that you need at this time? And so anything like that is so personalised. But then the next show you came along to, and what was that like for you as you were going round the stalls and explaining who you were?
I absolutely loved it. It was, everybody knew my daughter, Debbie. So I got to this thing where I was going round, that's my daughter, which was really quite nice, because then everybody chatted, everybody was friendly, everybody had time to talk to you. It was just so wonderful, and it was lovely to see, actually, on my daughter's stall, the amount of people that were coming up and talking to her, the amount of interest that was in the stall. It was really nice to see that.
Yeah, and I think I really enjoyed seeing that, because you felt quite excited about that, because you said it's almost like when you mentioned to other people that you were my mum, It was like you were almost like a little celebrity around that bit and people making time for you. But I think everybody does that at the wellbeing shows. And that's what I really like about being in this community, is that people genuinely care. They want to help each other. They want to support each other. So I'm really glad that you're starting to invest a bit of your time and thought processes more in what I do and what's going on, because I think it, like you say, it's so beneficial for well-being.
Well, I think the people that you talk to as well, they talk to you, they listen to you, they have a laugh with you, but there's never any judgment. Mm-hmm. They also always come with a place of kind of love and understanding. It's really nice.
Yeah. And I think sort of going back through your journey, you've had quite an interesting life, really, haven't you? And I think perhaps sometimes there has been judgment, or there's been differences between perhaps you and your parents' belief systems. So I think let's have a little chat about that, because I think that's been an interesting journey for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, my parents were obviously brought up in a different era and it was different then, but we spent a lot of the time as children being moved from one place to another. The grass was always greener on the other side, so we'd go somewhere, it was all going to be brilliant. And then things went wrong and we'd move again. Mm-hmm. And that sort of kept happening. My parents were the sort of people that would throw themselves into what they were doing, but we kind of came second. So they used to do the football pools. And me and my brother would be just sat hours and hours and hours in a car, mm-hmm. nothing to do, while we were waiting for them to go around and do that. And that's kind of like our experience growing up. Mm-hmm. Parents obviously loved us in their own way.
Yep.
But we spent a lot of our time fending for ourselves.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that is very different to sort of today's society. I know we've had a bit of a chat about that before, that I think it really influenced your parenting with me, and I think as a grandparent as well. So with me and my siblings, you always spent a lot of time with us, especially when we were little, really being very nurturing. You spent a lot of time playing with us, a lot of time interacting with us. And I really appreciate that, because I think that made a huge difference in terms of our well-being and our development. And I know me and my siblings were all quite academic, but I do think it was a lot of that nurture in our early years, a lot of that time that was invested in us, that helped our brain to develop, that helped put those neural pathways into place to then allow us to excel. And I think that's because of a lot of what you did. But then I saw it again with my children. So I was very lucky that when I had my children, when I had my first two children, primary school teacher, and you moved to come and live closer by, so you had them sometimes to look after them and play with them when I had to go to work. I worked part-time, but what I was really grateful for is when you came in, and I think this is a luxury of being a grandparent, you just devoted all of your energy to them. It was all about them. And I remember my oldest, she liked to play Rapunzel. And it basically, she was tying it to something, it just used to be Rapunzel, Rapunzel, let down your hair. And then she would let down her hair, and then you'd be Mother Gothel and climb up. And that was it. And then it would start again. So it was a narrative that was about 30 seconds to a minute long. And I remember one afternoon you sat playing that with her for about 3 hours. And as much as I loved doing that, I did a lot with the children when they're little myself, because I got that model
from you. You did a lot.
Well, I did struggle, to be honest, sometimes with sleep deprivation, also trying to work, trying to run the house, interact with the kids, some of those monotonous games over and over again. I didn't have as much commitment to them as what you did, so I'm very grateful to that. But you were also a big part in my journey then as I transitioned. So you continued to help after I'd had our third child and I changed careers. So I think your childhood greatly influenced your parenting and your grandparenting.
I think so, but my three children have always been a joy. From the word go up till now, they've just been amazing. I've loved every minute of it. You learn, I know it says that, but you can learn so much from a child as well. Mm-hmm. They are wonderful. They speak and say what they think and what they mean. And it's really lovely to hear it, because they're coming from a different place.
Yeah.
And it's so nice. The world looks so beautiful in their eyes, and there's so much to do and explore. Mm-hmm. And it's just so wonderful. And I say, I've loved every minute of it. And being a grandma, that was really special as well. Different, because you could spend more time devoted to just spoiling them a little bit.
Plying my children with copious amounts of sweets.
It was like, it's important to get in the buggy. If you get in the buggy, Daddy, I'll buy you some chocolate buttons. And then I would have done that with you, but yeah.
My kids are still very, very appreciative of that now. Obviously, like you say, you found parenting a joy, which is amazing. So what was I like then when you became a parent to me, like as a baby and as a young child? What was that experience
right.
like?
Well, you were my first, and you came out of me wide awake, and you stayed wide awake. You didn't sleep. You probably have maybe an hour's sleep day and night. You didn't want to be still, so you weren't happy just in somebody's arms. We had to walk round with you. So me and David, who was my partner at the time, we spent hours just walking you up. We actually wore a pathway in the carpet because you didn't want to be still. You had to be held and you had to be moved. And sleep at night just got, I couldn't get any, and I just really needed sleep. So we found that you liked adverts on television. So we made a recording of adverts and let them play. And actually, the only way we could sleep was to put you in bed with us. Although everybody said no, I had to get sleep. And that was the way to do it. And actually, it worked beautifully because you would lay awake and you'd listen to the adverts. And then when you were feeding, I could just feed you. And it just worked. And then when you got older, we put you fairly soon, I think, about two-ish, into a bed. And when you went into a bed of your own, not trying to put you in a cot or anything, you then started to sleep, which was lovely. But by then, I'd got Tom come along and then Emma. So actually, for about 6 years of my life, I hadn't had a time when I'd had a full night's sleep.
And I think I probably got a lot of payback for that once I had my children, because they were always poor sleepers. So once again, my oldest, she came out wide awake. And she needed occupying pretty much 24/7. She needed walking around, moving, chatting to, reading stories. And I had to learn how to do everything one-handed.
Yeah, I could do that. Even hang the washing out. I managed to do that while holding them.
Which I think, so I've tried it recently, like to grate some cheese doing one hand or to peel a potato with one hand, holding something. And I can't physically do that now. And I'm thinking, how on earth did I manage it at the time? But you just do.
You just do.
So, yeah, I had about 5 or 6 years of no sleep because I had the three quite close together. But it was a great time, really happy time of my life. But I think one of the other things that I found interesting that you said about me when I was little was I had a fascination with the moon.
Oh, yeah, you absolutely loved the moon. When I went into labour with Thomas, your auntie came to look after you and you just spent all night looking at the moon and you really loved the moon. So that was really good. And as a child, you was very quick to walk and talk and very, very sensible. And it was surprising what grown-up conversations you could have with you, even as a two-year-old, that you wouldn't actually think you'd be able to have. And you was always interested in maybe different things to what you'd expect a child to be interested in. So yeah, it was very good. It was a lovely experience, but it wasn't what I'd seen from other children.
I think I've probably followed that path all the way through that.
That's
I don't
right,
quite
yeah.
follow the typical. But I think even as a child I had a fascination with, like you say, more the spiritual realms, nature, I remember being quite young and going out. I had a book, a ladybird book, and it was about wildflowers. And I used to go out with both you and your mum, Nan Chris, and look at the wildflowers. And I think that was something that was really interesting because I think you'd had quite a challenging relationship sometimes with your parents, because as well as obviously life being very different than expectations, they were also very, very strict Roman Catholic. And I'll probably get this wrong, but in particular, Grandad liked... Want to have a Pope Pius V or Pope Pius VI?
I think so, yeah.
I could have got that wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was one of the Pope Pius.
They just followed a certain Catholicism that wasn't the normal Catholicism. It was going off on a road somewhere different.
I remember that sort of with interest. So one of the earliest memories I have, so I could have only been little at the time, was we were coming to Lincoln. So you came to Lincoln with us and we had to go and see some Roman Catholic priests that they were meeting up with. So I think I must have been about three. I've just seen on your face, you're like, what on earth are you on about? But we saw these priests, and I don't know what we did, but I think Nan and Granda needed to go and see them first for whatever reason. I think they were quite actively involved at that time. But then after that, we travelled to see your grandma in a nursing home. And I was a toddler at the time.
That's right.
It was the first time I thought about death. So your grandma had dementia and she had severe dementia.
That's right.
And she sat there and she was in a nappy. And at one point she had to go off and have her nappy changed. And she was also being fed. And it just seemed barbaric to me at such a young age. So I've been maybe two, three at a time. I was like, well, why is this adult in nappies? I'm out of nappies. Mm-hmm. And you just explained that obviously there'd been a separation from her body and her mind and she was very poorly. But I remember the conversation. You were always very good at just talking to us in a way that explained things simply, but as they were. And you explained that actually she's been poorly for a long time. And what you couldn't understand either was that every time she got an infection, they kept pumping her full of antibiotics and bringing her back. And it just, when I watched that, I thought there's no quality of life here. And it really got me thinking, I think, about life and death and the meaning of it all. So that was quite interesting. Not quite sure where I'm going with that.
No, but it was probably, you always was a deep thinker and you always, obviously, even from an early age, you had more interest in other things than we probably realised at that time. Not you was a bit older, did you start to realise that you maybe had special gifts, you could feel things and sense things. Uh-huh. But when you was little, you was just more really interested in a lot of things that you actually don't expect a child to be interested in. You asked a lot of questions, you acquired a lot of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think, obviously, we all have different interactions with our parents and our grandparents. And I think you probably had quite a challenging time with my grandparents as parents, because I think they did follow that strict belief system. And perhaps sometimes maybe you felt at odds and your life was at odds with what they wanted for you in terms of following their beliefs.
I didn't believe in anything they believed, to be honest. It was just, to me, it was just wrong. It was just wrong, and that's it.
I think there were some quite judgmental elements to some of their beliefs.
That's right.
But I think, obviously, as grandparents, something I really valued from them is, it was interesting going to the house. So you go to the house, first, there wasn't a television, and we did have a television at our house, but there was all these religious books. Like, Grandad used to like to collect these old religious books. And there were shelves and shelves of them, and they had this old clock that you wound up and it chimed every 15 minutes, and there was like bells everywhere and iconography, pictures of Jesus and crosses everywhere. And I really liked going, but it was very different. It was like walking back in time almost. And there was that sort of, but then I really appreciate that, because when they would have those conversations with me, spiritual conversations.
That's right.
And I remember from quite early on, they used to speak about guardian angels to me. And I think they'd been to pilgrimage in Walsingham. So once again, I was a toddler at this time. I seem to have very vivid memories of my like toddler years.
Yeah.
And they brought back me and Thomas these two little tiny pictures. They're tiny little cards, like almost like cigarette card sizes. And they had pictures of angels. And it's like, oh, this is to show you you've got a guardian angel. And I remember them telling me stories about guardian angels and about miracles. So they used to like to sit and tell me about different miracles that had happened in different parts of the world. And I always found that really fascinating. So I was very glad of them. I didn't agree with a lot of their beliefs, but it was always a safe place for me to go and ask those sort of questions. And I think that helped with what went on in our house a little bit. And we won't go into that too much, but we will go into it a bit. So we moved into a house. Would I have been, what, about a year and a half when we moved into that property?
Yeah, yeah. At the time, house prices were just shooting up, and we'd tried to move from our little terraced house. We needed more room. And every time we went to get something, they would say, yes, you've got it. And an hour later, somebody would go zumpers.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up in this house, which we knew the people that were selling it, and they promised that they would let us have it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a house that I would have ever picked, but it was near the school and it had the room we needed. I never quite liked the feel of it, but it was ideal. And so we moved into this house.
Mm-hmm.
And it never felt good, never felt happy. Yeah.
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 And I think that was a huge part of my life, that house became. There was lots of very strange things. And do you know what? As I'm talking to you about this, we'll have a little bit of a chat now, but I think we should maybe make a separate podcast, a little special series that goes into this in a bit more detail, because I think we've got quite an interesting story to tell.
Well, it went on for such a long time that it'd be very hard to put it into just a few words. And we went into a lot of research and we even went to the archives to find out historical research, and there was a lot went on. So yeah, there'd be too much to put into, I think, just the small.
So just as an overview then for people who are listening to this podcast, we basically lived in a house that you would class as being haunted. And from being little, I would see things. And then you noticed some situations when he was born that particularly made you feel unsettled.
Yeah, well, you'd leave him with his cot side up, and over the monitors, you'd hear the cot side come down.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened quite a lot. As you all got older, more seemed to happen. Like, I could be on my own in the house, just doing housework downstairs, and I'd hear one of you children shout me from upstairs. And I'd go up and then realise you were all at school.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were cleaning the bathroom, that particularly felt very sinister. You felt like you were being watched, and
yeah,
it felt creepy and it wasn't nice. And sometimes, I can remember a few times, you'd wake up in the night and you'd seen somebody, and it was this man all cloaked, and he'd been sat on your bed. And actually, there was an indent in the bed,
yes,
where this man had been sat.
Mm-hmm.
And it never felt right. Sometimes I'd be downstairs with the children and furniture would be dragged across the ceiling, and you'd get up there and nothing would have moved. And we had knives and things move about in the kitchen. It was very strange. Mm-hmm. Very strange.
And I think through that experience, because it seemed to particularly target me, particularly when I got
That's
to
right.
my teenage years, and I'm very, very grateful all of that happened now, but I was terrified at the time.
That's right.
But I was very grateful to you, because I think you'd experienced things as well.
That's
in
right.
The property. But I think you've also had a bit of spiritual interest or spiritual awareness. So what you actually did is, you were always there for me to talk to about it. You didn't know what to do about it, but you were open to me explaining the nights I'd had, the situations, because it got to where for several years, between sort of 14 and 18, I didn't really sleep because there was always something
going
pounding
on.
Me
yeah.
And going on. But what was really interesting about that, sort of linking back to our grandparents, is once again, they had some influence. So as much as they were quite, you couldn't talk about lots of things to them. I mean, I had a conversation once about how the world was made, and the literal yeah. view that the world was made in 6 days, and how creationism could fit into that. So I was able to have those conversations with them that were perhaps quite contentious, that they wouldn't have engaged in them with you or other people.
Oh, no,
but they did
with
me. For
some reason they did with you, yeah.
And but they were really good at actually giving some sort of spiritual guidance in terms of what was going on in the house. And so they provided blessed things, both when it was happening to Tom's cot when he was younger, but also for my room. And although it didn't stop it, it did give me a level of protection. So I think those teenage years in that house have helped to probably set my path as an adult. Not that you realise at the time,
no.
But
I think looking back, that's why we got that house.
Mm-hmm.
And we couldn't get any others. I think it was there to be a learning path for you. And
yes.
I think that's why we got it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting. So obviously then, I hated being there. I felt very uncomfortable. So when I was 18, basically, I decided I was going to university, and I ended up getting my own house and never really coming back other than for first holidays. But you had a lot of change and transition during that time, didn't you? And I think you had a lot of personal growth over a few years, sort of learning your independence, really.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
And I think that's a funny time. I speak to lots of clients and they've devoted their life to their kids, and then all of a sudden their kids get older and they get a bit of empty nest syndrome. So
yeah, it is horrible. You come home and the house just feels empty. It really feels bad. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously now we're all in our 30s. Obviously you are not feeling that now. But how long did that sort of transition take for you to get used to not having kids around all the time? Because you really had doted on us and nurtured us.
It took a time. Obviously, that's what my life had been.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved every minute of it. But then once the last one had actually gone, there was this void.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you fill it? And I think for all those years, you kind of put yourself in a way second place.
Yep.
Children came first. And then all of a sudden, what do I do with my life?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's, I think when I started to think, as a child, I'd always been interested in spirituality and all those sorts of things, but I'd never gone down that path. So I think that's the time when I started to find out more about me and who mm-hmm. I was.
Yeah.
Rather than being somebody's mum and somebody's wife, it's the time when I started to find out about me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite good. It was, yeah.
And I think there is that thing, isn't there? I think seeing you go through that experience, it's maybe influenced how I am as well, that I've always been very aware that you did devote everything to being the housewife, the mother, the wife. And that was a huge transition for you. And I think experiencing that's always made me feel like I need to make sure I've always got a little bit of something still for myself. That, because I think when the kids were very little, everything was all about them. And that was absolutely the right thing. But I almost felt quite isolated in some ways of like, well, who am I anymore? What is me? Because even for a few years, like going for a bath in peace without somebody coming in for a poo, chatting to you when you're having a wee or something like that, you don't really get any space. So I think...
Well, I think you lose your identity in as much as you don't even become your own name anymore. You get known as Debbie's mum or Tom's mum or Emma's mum. You don't even have a name anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it all becomes about school runs.
That's
and
right,
life
yeah.
becomes about like... revolved around the kids.
That's it.
So I think I learnt from you that I needed a bit of something for myself, and I suppose that really ignited again my curiosity in well-being. And as I obviously went on that journey, I had endometriosis, and then I had the reflexology to recover it. And through meeting Linda, the reflexologist, she started to introduce me to different spiritual concepts, to different therapies. And I think when I transitioned, I'd already started becoming interested. I'd learnt Reiki for myself. I'd just done that out of personal interest. I started to read the odd book, the odd bit of information. But by retraining as a hypnotherapist, all of a sudden it opened me to this world of, everything fits into place. Because I think when I was at school, it was a very academic school that I went to, and there was a big push, wasn't there, on homework and work.
That's right.
And the amount of homework was excessive. But I got used to that working hard.
The homework was excessive, but having said it was excessive, you always put in extra to what you should have done. So if they'd have asked you for 2 hours homework a night, you'd probably still up at midnight getting it done because it had to be done.
I wanted to get
right.
the outstanding
yes.
on it.
Yeah, that's right.
Because at my school, they obviously rewarded you. So you had outstanding, good, satisfactory or unsatisfactory. And they would give you, this is the amount of work you need to do for satisfactory. This is good and this is outstanding. So they would do your core homework and then additional on top. And I always wanted to get those outstandings because when you did a really good job, you might get a merit. And then when you get a merit, if you get so many merits, you get a badge. And so the first few years of school, I was really into those badges. As I got older, I wasn't, but it had really put that work ethic of constantly being very busy all the time. And it was really hard in some ways, but it gave me a passion for learning. I liked learning. I enjoy learning. I enjoy my brain being stimulated. And so then for a little while when the children were little, it was all about their needs. And it was all at a much lower level to give them the nurture they need. Because you can't obviously talk to somebody necessarily at your level. You need to come down with a young person
down.
To
yeah.
their level. So it's just above to help them sort of go up the next stage of the ladder. So I think when I then started training as a therapist, I all of a sudden had that little bit of thing for me of, wow, this is something I'm passionate in. I'm using my brain again. It's something that I enjoy. It's something that I can be creative with. And I think that really opened me up. But I think if I hadn't have seen your examples with how doting you were with us as kids, but also perhaps that little bit where you did lose some of your identity, I don't think I'd have become the person that I am now.
Yeah, I think all life experiences always help you all. And all three of you did really well. The school was exceptional and you all enjoyed it. It was very strict, but you all thrived in that. You knew what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. And you all made some good friends while you were there. And I think it helped all of you, but it was great.
And I'm very grateful. I think I can be more appreciative of it now as an adult, but I didn't realise at the time. It seems like I took 13 GCSEs.
Which is a hell of a lot today.
But I didn't realise that wasn't the norm.
Yeah.
Because the minimum you were allowed to take at our school was 11 and a half. So I did a few extra just
because
that's
you.
What I was like. Yeah. But have I always been like that then?
Yeah, yeah, you've always been like that, yeah. I think maybe when you were little, I think maybe sometimes primary school-wise, some of the teachers maybe struggled with you a little bit because I think your understanding was obviously maybe above what it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes that caused a little bit of conflict. And I think with other children at primary school, you were on a different wavelength to most of those. So it wasn't until you got to your secondary school that you started to find what I call good friends and mm-hmm. people.
Well, I was a loner really at primary school a lot of the time. I think I'd enjoyed play school, Quackers Playgroup. That was brilliant. And I have lots of positive memories from being very tiny there.
Yeah.
I remember one time, bless you, you would... We were going on a sponsored duck walk because it was called Quackers.
That's right, yeah.
And you spent all this time sewing this elaborate costume for me and my brother of Donald Duck and Daisy Duck. And then we went into the playgroup and they had made, for the children that didn't have things, these paper masks, these cardboard masks. And there was one there that was basic as basic could be. And it was yellow and I loved yellow. And I was like, yep, that's the mask for me. So all this stuff that you'd made, I still wore the rest of the outfit. But I remember I wanted the yellow mask.
Which is fine.
But then when it got to primary school, I did find it hard. I found separation hard from you. I didn't really want to be there. I wanted to be at home. And I remember having probably a lot of anxiety then. So I had a lot of tummy aches, a lot of headaches,
yeah.
A lot of not feeling well. And
that's
I think
right.
I remember being in reception and often them having to talk to you because I didn't feel very well. And as I went through the school, one of my first experiences of going for like school dinners, packed lunch, and there was this dinner lady there and I had a ham sandwich. You'd taken me a ham sandwich and I don't think you'd have put the crust on it because I didn't like crust. But maybe I was full up and didn't want to eat it or something happened. And this lady told me I had to eat my sandwich. And that was it for me. I was not going to school ever again to have a hot meal or a packed lunch. I was eating at home. So bless you, for the next 7 years of my primary school, you had to come and pick me up every lunchtime, feed me my lunch at home, and then take me back to school. And I think in some ways I needed that space because I found it very hard to be around all these other people that I just didn't feel like I really related to. I felt like I was born in the wrong time period. I felt like I should have been born in a different era or a different place. And that was tricky. But it also meant then because I wasn't spending time at school in my lunch breaks, as friendships were forming, I wasn't really involved in those friendship circles either, which then made it difficult
yeah.
for me. But I was very grateful to go home at my lunch. I didn't like being out in the winter in the cold either.
No. I don't think you and me have ever liked the cold, have we? Mm. No.
But I think I was quite interested in a child as well, perhaps through primary school, with some of the friendships I chose when I did have friends at primary school.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't always choose perhaps the people that were going to be very kind to me.
That's right. You was having to choose people that were actually not very nice to you.
Yeah.
Which was very strange, yeah.
And they were the people I gravitate to. And I've sort of wondered about that now. And I think sometimes in them, I saw that there was a vulnerability or a need or a difficulty within them. And I think in some ways, maybe I wanted to help. Or there was some desire to see if I could improve them almost to make them feel better. So I think I've always had that within me, and that's maybe why I've become a therapist. But I wonder also now if it was linked to my levels of self-esteem and self-confidence, because I did lack that, didn't I, growing up?
Oh, yes, yeah. Especially when you were little.
Mm-hmm.
Once you got to your grammar school, you seem to flourish quite a lot. You got a lot more confidence and a lot more energy, and you made some, you said, chose some strange friends at times, but you made some okay friends, yeah. So, but I think being little, you were just, I don't know, maybe in some ways too grown up, if that makes sense, to be with the other little ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I feel very appreciative now, because I think through my life, I've always gone through almost looking for my tribe, looking for my group of people that I fit in with. And I feel now finally through this well-being journey, through becoming a therapist, through allowing my spirituality to be expressed, I finally found that tribe, that group of people who get it to different levels.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I've seen it, and I've seen you flourish, really flourish since you've gone down this path. And you're doing something, you're more than capable of it all. You're really good with anybody that talks to you. You're very helpful. You're so good at your job. And it's just amazing to see. It's lovely to see you with groups of people that enjoy your company. Mm-hmm. It's so nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I was reflecting the other day, because, like, I've just recently done one of the Lizzian shows, and I'll go into a room now and I will stand and just talk to people. I'll go and do a 45 minute or an hour presentation, and that's natural to me now. But I think going back to my childhood when I was younger, I was so painfully shy. I didn't want to be noticed. It's almost like if I could be blended into the wallpaper so nobody could see me and I could just observe, I'd be happy.
Happy, yeah.
And I think I'm really proud of myself actually for that, because that was a big hurdle to overcome that, because I think I was quite introverted. And I've learned how to, as I've become more comfortable in myself, express that in an outward way so that I can help other people.
I think sometimes it's been like a learning curve as well, because I think growing up, you're always trying to live up to other people's expectations, what they want of you. And sometimes that's not an easy thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Once you realise who you are and what you can do, you're not having to live your life by what other people expect. You're living it by what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes such a difference to your life.
Absolutely.
You can't be what everybody wants you to be.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's been a huge learning point for me. And that's what I would really want anybody to take away from listening to these episodes, that it's important to be yourself. It's important to find your authentic voice. And as you continue to learn and heal and grow, then that brings the right people and the right situations to you.
That's right. Well, I think if you're unhappy in yourself, you actually don't make anybody around you happy.
Mm-hmm.
You're so busy trying to fulfill what everybody needs, and actually you're not doing a good job to yourself or to them.
Mm-hmm.
You need to look after yourself first, and then you can be the best you can to other people.
I absolutely agree. So I think we're almost coming to the end of this episode. I'm so pleased you were brave enough to come and do it with me. Are there any final thoughts or final words that you want to leave the listeners with?
Only if there's a strong inclination when you're growing up that you want to do something, follow it. Follow your dreams, find a way of doing it, and it will benefit you in the end.
Wonderful. Thank you ever so much for coming today. And thank you to our audience for listening. Take care, and I shall speak to you again soon. Bye-bye for now. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure you subscribe. If you would like to find out more about the therapies that we provide and the training we offer, please visit our website, www.tranquil-awakenings.co.uk. You can also find us on social media.